At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
I keep seeing celebrities' posts, me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly, you don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there, it's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone, and today I sit down with a gentleman I got to know a year ago. We coached together in Texas, and he's become one of my favorite guys. He's currently the third base coach for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Beasley. Beas, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Boone, man. I look forward to catching up, brother.
You realize you're the first guest, and I've had a lot of guests on this podcast that I've ever called a gentleman. I say ladies and gentlemen, but I said, hey, he's a gentleman, because you are a gentleman, Bees. And I got to know you a year ago. We had a good time. We had some tough times. You told me you were my guiding light, because I was back into the mix and I hadn't been in uni, and I'd look at you like, is this really what it's like? Oh, yeah, Booney. Stay tuned. It gets more entertaining. It gets more entertaining. Your Pittsburgh Pirates, they've been hot. I'll tell you what, that Central is hot.
Yeah.
Now, think you'd like to be in the American League right now. You'd be leading some division somewhere, you know.
Yeah, we'd be okay in the American League. But, yeah, the Central is tough, man. No one wants to lose. So, but it's a really good division. It's better than I thought it was. The pitching is deep in that division.
Yeah, you guys, it's going to be a fight, and you guys are doing well. We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's talk about last year. First thing I told you after about 2-3 weeks into it was, you know, Bees, I really appreciate all the coaches I've ever had in my career, because at the time when you're going through it, when you're a player, you have no idea what that dividing wall is between coaches and players. And our job as coaches, and I felt it was my first job, is to keep the noise away from the players. Because as you know, players win games, players lose games. We can just be there as a good, stable force to keep them going. But it was different for me. And you know, me and you talked a lot about it. You've been doing this a long time, got a lot of experience. So I leaned on you sometimes. And you know, what I took from you was, we went through some really good times. We went through some really tough times, but you had that same demeanor. And it's like, Booney, all we can do is go home, get a good night's sleep, and get back after tomorrow. And that's really the way you've got to go about it, because really there is little to no control we have as coaches.
Exactly. And I mean, the thing with that, Booney, is, I mean, we have to be consistent. You know, we preach consistency with players all the time. And you know, as a player, and you've been through it in your playing career, the ebbs and flows of the game. And, you know, the definition of who you are sometimes is based on how you perform. And players, you know, they get that. And that's normal. And now with social media, it's even more relevant because guys get to hear and everyone's opinion about their night. And especially if it wasn't the night that they wanted to have, you know, so that eats at them. And so we're their stable, man. When they see us every day, they got to see the same demeanor, the same guy. But we build relationships. It's a very fine line that we walk, building the right relationships so you can have the right conversations. We're always going to be honest with them. That's one thing I've always told myself. I'm never going to lie to players and say things that are not true, because, you know, when you tell one lie, you've got to tell another one. And you just can't keep that ball rolling. So I'd rather just be honest and tell them the truth in love. And that's why you got to build the right conversation, so they know that whatever you say, it's coming from the right spot. And it's not about us. It's about them. And that's, you know, but we got to be truthful to them. But we got to love them at the same time, because they need us mostly when they're struggling. When people are having success, everyone wants to jump on board, but they'll need us then. But when they're going through the dungeon, you know, they need us to try to help lift them up and then build them up and help them to believe in themselves sometimes, because we know their capabilities more than they do most nights.
And I found too, and you hit it on a good point, don't lie to your players. Now, there's one thing lying, and there's another thing. Maybe I'm going to withhold some information here.
Yeah.
Because this is not the time or the place. In my instance, it was pretty cut and dry. I'm the hitting coach, so I deal with hitters. Now, I might have a conversation mid game with a certain hitter, but I know that same conversation with player B doesn't work right now because he's got a game to finish. And you learn that in learning personalities. You with the outfield defense. Like, maybe mid-game, I can talk to a Dolis Garcia, but maybe this should, and I'm just using these guys as random examples. Yeah. I might wait till tomorrow to talk to Evan Carter because they're two different personalities and they'll react different to the same information. So, yeah, withholding is one thing. Doing what's best you think for the player and the team, that's something that we have to judge as coaches.
Absolutely. Timing. That's basically what you're talking about. That's timing, and timing is the most important element, because when you give information, you want it to be received. And if a player is not ready to receive it, or at the moment, and like you said, it's from an outfield aspect, if a guy, we do something that we don't throw to the right base, or, you know, make a play that allowed the inning to snowball a little bit, but you're leading off when you come in as a batter, it's not the right time to have that conversation. And so you let that batter, that hit, that outfielder come in and have his at bat and do his thing. And maybe that's a after the game, or it's the next day type of deal. You just deal with it. And so you're right. The timing of what we do is probably more important than anything we can address. So you got to make sure that, you know, you're doing it at the right time so that player receives that.
What was your first year coaching in the big leagues? 06?
No. Yeah. 06 with Frank Robinson. Yeah. With the Nationals.
What? Yeah. And your first job was for Frank Robinson. Did I ever tell you the story about Frank Robinson and me?
No.
My dad played winter ball, and this is back in Puerto Rico, and probably, oh man, had to be the early, I forget when Frank ended his career, but it's the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And me and Frank would have tennis matches. His daughter used to babysit for me.
Oh, wow.
So I finally get to the big leagues. I played against Frank. And then all of a sudden, Frank was in charge of the fines for Major League Baseball a short period of time.
Absolutely.
And I remember I got thrown out of one game, Bees. I know, after knowing me and my temper, you'd think I got thrown out of a lot more games, but I got thrown out of one in my career, one at the big league level. And it was a pitch down and away. We were in Kansas City. It was one of those twilight games. So it was like a 5 o'clock start. Nobody could see, including the umpire. He rings me up. No, I swing. He rings me up on two pitches to give me 0-2. They're not even close. Right. And this is way before ABS. Yeah. So we don't have any reference. Mm-hmm. I just know I can't see, but I know that almost hit the dirt. So I'm 0-2. I'm pissed. I worked a count back to, I think, a 2-2 count. I swing and miss a breaking ball in the dirt by a foot and a half. I throw my bat, throw my helmet. I swung and missed. Mm-hmm. Umpire throws me out of the game. I said, that's an illegal ejection. I said, it wasn't on a called strike. I said, I was pissed because I swung and missed the pitch. He goes, no, you were pissed because of the two pitches I called strikes, which he was right. He was right.
Right.
But I swung and missed. I got thrown out of the game. It was the first time ever. Anyway, my fine goes to Frank Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Frank writes me a letter with a fine attached. I wrote him a return letter, not an email. A return letter on stationery. I said, Frank, this is an illegal ejection.
Right.
And you need to take up my fine with your daughter. She'll agree with me. I never got anything else in the mail. I never got fined. Yeah. So that's my Frank Robinson story. I know it's not that great of a story, but it's
I
spent a lot of time with Frank as a kid. Playing tennis and a lot of good memories. And by the way, underrated player. One of the greatest. I mean, everybody knows Frank Robinson's a great player. Check the books. For those of you watching and listening to the Brett Boone podcast, check the books on Frank Robinson. It's kind of Hank Aaron-ish. Not that ridiculous, but he's up there top 10. I mean, all time from an offensive standpoint in particular. But he's pretty awesome.
He was a legit player. I'll tell you what. Getting to know him, and you know, I always knew about him, and I was like so in awe of who he was when I first joined his staff that I couldn't call him Frank, you know, out of respect. I'm like, Mr. Robinson, you know, in baseball, no one does that, you know,
nobody.
Your first name, last name, bases, bees, or whatever, booty, you know, it's no, you know, Mr. Nothing, and man, I just could not pull myself to like go into his office those first few days of spring training, and I just kind of shot away. So he calls me in after like the third day because I hadn't been in his office. I'm his third base coach. And so I hear, Bees, get in here. So I walk in there and I said, yeah, Mr. Robinson. And he said, what did you call me?
Yeah.
I said, Mr. Robinson. And he just looked at me with a blank look, man, a really hard stare. And I said, I get it. I know the rules. I know how it works. I said, but out of respect, I can't come here and call you Frank. I just can't do it. And he said, well, you going to call me Frank or you going to call me Skip? One of those. So I called him Skip the whole time, you know, until, you know, God rest his soul now. But, you know, we communicated, you know, years after. But I always was Skip to me. I just could not call him Frank out of respect. But he taught me a lot. And, you know, he was tenacious, man. And like you said, on the rules thing, he pretty much argued every night about something. And I take the lineup card up and he says, hey, before you go up there tonight, tell those guys that when I come out to argue, meet me halfway. Don't make me walk all the way out there. So I go tell the umpires because they knew he was coming at some point, you know, they'd laugh and everything. But they'd argue every night and they said, well, Frank, you wrote the rules. And it's like, well, you misinterpreted them.
That's right. That's right. There's always a catch.
Absolutely.
See, and the Mr. Robinson goes to my opening, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Beasley, Tony Beasley, gentleman, first gentleman I called. I expect nothing less out of you.
All right.
Your history, you've done it all. You're a field coordinator. You manage in the minor leagues a bunch. You've had a lot of big league coaching experience. Mostly at third base, but I want to go over for the people out there listening that really take them behind the scenes a little bit of a bench coach. Mm-hmm. You've been with a lot. You've never been a bench coach, have you?
No.
Okay. Take the Brett Boone podcast on its behind the scenes in spring. Because they, you know, they see the bench coach and they think, oh, what does he do? What do they do? Take us through a spring training. What's the bench coach responsible for? And then once the season starts, what's their main job every day other than to keep the skipper sane?
Yeah, I will tell you what, man. In spring training, the bench coach probably gets less sleep than any coach on the staff. You know, he's making sure that the whole daily schedule is coordinated, first of all. But he's communicating with the pitching coach and every outfield, myself, infield coach, and the hitting guys, mostly the hitting guys, because the pitching and the hitting kind of runs the day and everything else kind of falls into that with fundamentals and everything. But making sure that the day runs smoothly and that everything synchronizes it's at certain times, because pitchers are usually on a different schedule than the position players. And so they go off and stretch at a certain time and they're doing their thing. You don't hardly see them. But then all of a sudden, we're doing a fundamental that doesn't involve the pitchers. But then there's a day where there's a fundy that does involve the pitchers. They all have to be there. We have to have base runners coming from the minor league side for certain run downs and pickoffs and things of that nature. So they have to make sure that when we all have to come together, that there's no lap, there's no downtime. And it's really tough to coordinate that. And so, pitching, bench coaches are constantly checking the clocks and the watches and, making sure everybody's where it's supposed to be so that the day can kind of run smooth. And then when it ends, they already, usually they're like 3 or 4 days ahead. But then when games start, there's always an audible. There's always something. There's rain that morning. So we have to do an audible with our work on the field. It's going to be in the cage today. It's going to be something different that we decide to do. We got all the major league meetings, the different reps that are coming into town that we have to have meetings that are mandatory. And so it's a constant, ebb and flow of their time and getting the schedule to just sync up. That's the main thing they have to do. And then, they have game responsibilities with the manager as well as just making sure that the guys that are going in the game know when they're going in, the time they have to be in the game. And you can't do it at the last second. Guys have to have ample time to get ready and get loose and make sure that they're ready. In spring training, there's so many substitutions that, it's a lot going on. And so when that day ends, they're on to the next day, and then the next day, and the next day. And spring training is almost 2 months, so it's like 6 weeks, basically, that they have that headache of being there. They're there, like, some of those guys get that 4 or 4:30 in the morning, and they leave in the evening. Everyone's gone. They're still there. So they don't leave till maybe 6, 7 o'clock at night, and then they're back. So they don't hardly do anything but spend all day at the ballpark, sleep for a few hours, and come back and do it again. And that's for 6 weeks, pretty much. And then the season starts, and it does ease up a little bit because the numbers are not as great. But then there's the daily schedule of making sure that players know, what the lineup is the night prior, any transactions that we're going to have, getting information from the other teams as far as, we're going on the road. We need the field early.
Right.
They're constantly communicating with the others. They have a lot of responsibility. They really do. You see them in the game kind of standing there beside the manager, but they're in the manager's ear. Pre-game, there's a scouting meeting, basically, I would say a pre-game prep meeting where everyone's going over the whole game scenario, like what pitchers are available that night, what are the matchups, what are the pockets in which we want to use a certain pitcher or a certain batter. And so we know what matchups benefit us, position player wise and pitching wise. And so they kind of hold on to that information and kind of stay in the manager's ear throughout the course of the game, not allowing him to kind of forget anything. But then at the same time, they have to be on top of the rules, because things happen quick in a ball game. There's something weird play that happens. They jump right to the rule book. They know the rules. And so the manager doesn't get caught with his pants down, and so it's a lot of responsibility that goes into that. And then the manager just happens to get tossed that night. Well, now they got to take over.
You're the skipper. Yeah.
Now they're the skipper. And so they find themselves in the heat of the battle and having to do managerial things and making managerial decisions and really dealing with how the players respond to the decisions that are made. That is not always pleasant. Then at the end of the game, if they have to manage that game, they also do the post game report with the reporters, and that's another element of it. So they have a really serious job, it seems like it's a gravy job at times, but when you really look in the inner workings of what they have to do, it's a lot. It's really a lot, and their time is valued, and it's they don't have a lot of free time at all. So I don't envy the being a bench coach. I really don't.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
I keep seeing celebrities post me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly. You don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there. It's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.
Yeah, because it's, you know, when I was a player, you know, my bench coach, part of his job was getting the temperature of the room, finding out who's feeling good, who's not feeling good, reporting back to Skip, and not from I'm just... you know, I'm a pipeline or I'm just giving information. It's no, this is information my manager needs to know to make us be as efficient as we can on the field. A year ago, Pipe was our bench coach in Texas. You're right. It's the little things. It's me calling him at 12 at night saying, hey, Pipe, I need the field at 2. Okay, well, we had it at 1:45. Well, I needed it at 2. Okay. Right. And then the next morning calling an audible and say, all right, we'll go back to 1:45. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad doing that, but those are things that he needs to work out. So this is all on top of a game plan. I'd go into, we'd be making a lineup the night after and he would be asking me questions like, Booney, in this situation, what do you think? Who would we pinch hit for? He might come to me mid game. Who do you want in this situation? Do you want player X or player Y? That doesn't mean that decision's going to be made by me. He's formulating a plan. He's talking to the skipper. He's talking to the hitting guys. Mm-hmm. He's talking to a lot of people. What do you think? What do you think in this situation? How's he feeling? How's he mentally? Yeah. So you're right. There's a lot of things that go into it to give that manager and ultimately the skipper. He's going to have his name on it. But the bench coach has a lot of behind the scenes going into it. And it seems in the day and age where we have so many more coaches than we used to have. I think it runs a lot more efficiently than it used to. Not that it didn't run efficient in my day. It did. But I think even more so now, everything's more dialed in. Everything's just more. You don't have to do anything as a player. Just check the board. You've got every piece of information you could possibly need, where you need to be, when you need to be there. So there's no excuses to really get out. But you're right. It is a lot. And, you know, nowadays we got quality control coaches. You know, you've got bullpen coaches, you've got assistants in the hitting coach aspect where we never had that. So it's a different animal. And that's why you've been around so much. I wanted to touch base. Being a first base coach, what's their responsibility?
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot as well because really they're the guys. It depends on what your team, the amount of freedom that they're allowed from their prospective ball club. The situations that I've dealt with, the first base coach has some leeway as far as the running game, you know, and we have to talk in meetings about, you know, what we can exploit from the other team, what kind of tips or what tendencies and cadences, things that we know that we're going to experience that night and how can we exploit them and what situations do we have the freedom to take advantage of it. And so the first base coach have a lot of freedoms, you know, sometimes, you know, as a third base coach myself, I may get a stop sign from the manager and I'll relay that sign over to the first base coach. We're not running here. Okay. But if I don't, then he has the freedom to pick and choose when, you know, maybe we want to take a shot here, maybe not. But the thing about his thing is he needs to be successful at it, because
sure.
if we're not successful at it, then you know, everyone's looking at him and you know, that freedom gets taken away. So, you know, we have to be good at what we do. So they spend a lot of time looking at pitchers' times to the plate, pitchers' pick tendencies, and how catchers block, how catchers set up, even soft counts, hard counts, things of that nature. Just gathering a lot of information, that things that can just give us an advantage on the bases, and just making sure that they have to know some of the information that I have to know as far as the outfielders, the arms, the positioning, and making sure guys know where the outfield is aligned, so that when the ball's hit, we can react, we can respond rather than react, but we can make the right play and then get off the mark and just make something happen, as opposed to being a half beat off. You know, half beat off gets you thrown out in the major league. So they have a ton of responsibility as well. They seem to like they can stand away and be forgotten, but you know, when guys get picked off at first and things of that nature, and people looking at them.
Yeah, and it's almost like they feel they got picked off, and it's like all of us out there coaching. It's like when my hitters aren't hitting, I feel it. I know I'm not the one swinging the bat, but I feel it, and it falls on me. If somebody gets picked off, if you wave somebody through, maybe they got a bad jump, maybe they didn't make a good turn. It was a good call, but at the end of the day, it's your fault. and that's how it feels.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that's the thing about coaching is, I think every coach that's going to be successful and have longevity in this game, like, they have to feel that way. Like you just said, we have to feel responsible. We have to take ownership and be accountable. And I always feel like as a third base coach, I have to take as much pressure off the player as possible. I don't want players to think about anything but running hard, is running as hard as they can. And if I just stand there, just keep running past me, because I'm not a goal sign. I'm a stop sign. Right. If I have to become a goal sign, then we're not doing our job. You know, we're not living up to our standards. And so if they just run hard, that's all I ask. Just all you guys got to do is run hard. That's it. And anything that goes wrong, if you get picked off, if you get thrown out, you get doubled off, it's my fault. Don't worry about it. It's my fault, because my job is to control the runner. If you run through a stop sign, it looks like it's your fault. It's still my fault, because I didn't do my job. My job.
You didn't tackle him. You didn't tackle him.
I didn't control the runner. So I say that, you know, to take all the heat off of the player, because I want that player to just go out there and play aggressively and play smart, but don't get too thoughtful as far as what he has to do as far as that's going to affect his effort level. just go hard. Just think you're going to score every time. And if you can, I'll stop you. Now, from first to third, balls in for those are their decisions, you know. But even when they go wrong, I'll take the blame somehow, you know, from the media, because I don't want any pressure. I don't want players to take any heat on that end of it. So that's just a part of the job.
Yeah, and your wheelhouse, obviously, is coaching third. You've done it a lot. You're good at it. And I remember, as a player, as a hitter, as an RBI guy, I remember just telling every third base coach, you just keep waving them. You just keep waving them in, because I need 100 RBIs. But there's so much more to it, and it is such an important position that people don't – I don't think third base coach is taken for granted. Yeah. But they don't realize how much goes on with the split second decisions, the thought process it goes through. I remember last year, you and I, and we'd hang together. When we weren't on offense, I'd pop down and hang with you on the end of the bat. And I remember there was one call, you waved somebody. It was such a good, it was so well executed by the defense that particular day. And they were out at the plate and you were kind of wearing it, and people were, you know, you were hurt hearing it a little bit. And I remember coming to you and I said, Bees, that's a good send. I said, that's a good send. No matter what you think, no matter how you're feeling right now, because I know you're not feeling good.
Right.
That was the right decision. And sometimes you make the right decisions that turn out bad. People up that watch the game, they only see when you get thrown out. And they didn't see that it was five excellent sends you have. You get no credit for that. That was the hitter, the runner. But I said, I remember that play with you. And I said, you know, everything had to go absolutely perfect. I said, you got to take what people don't understand is you have to take into consideration the ball club. How are we doing? How are the hitters doing? Who's on deck? If I take a chance here, I'm taking a chance because that guy on deck hasn't got a hit in a week, maybe.
Right.
I don't like the matchup with the guy on deck with this pitcher. I'm going to take a chance right here. And I remember that particular play, and it was bang, bang, and I couldn't believe the catch throw was as good as it was. It was in the perfect place. It just bounced, and he was out, and I could tell you were feeling it. You knew it was the right call, but you still feel bad because he was out.
Yeah,
I mean, remember I remember talking to you saying, Bees, that's I said it to you several times. I said, I don't care what anybody says, that was the right call. That was a good call.
Yeah.
Because there's good sins, and there's I'm sure you've had many sins in your life where you just
they're bad.
You just gotta, oh, what did I do? But that wasn't one of them. That wasn't one of them.
Yeah, I think one thing, like I give myself like five outs a year. And but I want them to be bang bang plays. Or I want to be plays where we have the lead and we're trying to tack on. But there are situations like what you said, too, where runs are going to be at a premium that night. I mean, if you're facing Mizorowski from Milwaukee. I mean, what are the chances you got two outs? Even if you got – what are the chances you getting back-to-back hits against the guy? You know, like it's – you look at how the game's shaping up that night and you see the guy on the mound say, man, he's dealing. He's nasty tonight. Like say, you manage your lineup, you manage what's on the mound, and you're just watching the game. And so you know that your opportunities to score at a premium. So you think if there's any chance, you know, that we can score a run here and without the defense, if the defense has to make a really good throw to the plate, I mean, we got to take a shot. And those are the nights that third base coaches are kind of on the edge because – you know there's going to be some 50-50 situations, and they don't always work out in your favor. And like you said, no one understands that in the stands. You know, they just think it's a bad send or we shouldn't have sent him, or there are nights where the offense is banging and I'm not taking chances. You know, it's like we plan to save. We'll keep banging. And then people are like, oh, yeah, you stop them. You know, so you just got to let the game tell you what to do. It's just like what we ask players to do. Just do what the game's asking you to do. And coaches, same thing. Do what the game's calling upon you to do in that moment. I will say this, too. With you last year, dude, you were put into a really, really difficult scenario. And I thought you handled it tremendously well. I mean, that it's not easy to get thrust into a team, especially a team with expectations, you know, with almost like a quarter of the way in the season. And, you know, you have to just come in and build relationships and, you know, deal with personalities and not be so overbearing to where the two guys that were already left in place, like it's a very touchy, feely type of situation, man. And it's not easy. And not a lot of people could have handled that. And I think that you did an outstanding job. I was really impressed because especially, you know, when you're passionate about something, you're passionate about something, you know. But I thought at the same time, you were really good at being diplomatic at times, but never like, you know, losing your convictions, things that you really thought were important. And I thought your message to the team, like when you first got there, was good. Like, you know, you're like, I'm not trying to get in the way right now. I'm just trying to learn you guys and be here. And I want to build the right relationships and have the right conversations. You know, you've been there and done that. And I thought you handled it tremendously well. And, you know, this is something that if you want to do it, dude,
I appreciate that, Bees. And me and you have had talks off the air. And yeah, I think I'm going to get back in uniform because, you know, as miserable as we can be at times, and I used to say this is no way to live, you know, when we're on a tough losing streak, you know, it's kind of innate. It's kind of built into us. You know, you've been a baseball lifer.
Yeah.
Just kind of like sometimes you're comfortable in that misery because that's what you are. That's what's in your bones. And it's been in my whole life. So I think I appreciate you saying that about me. My job when I came in is I don't want to be overbearing. I don't want to be Brett Boone, the player. I don't want to cause this big uproar. Yeah. It's like, first I got to get to know these guys, because right. the human side is the most important thing, is Absolutely. Developing relationships. Second, I don't want to tell you to do it the way I did it, because that doesn't work. It's not a get off my lawn time. Yeah, if you come to me and say, Booney, what worked best for you? I'm happy to share right. my experiences with you, because I got a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But I'm not here to overwhelm you with that and be like me and hit like we hit. And mm-hmm. no, it's okay. Let's work with each individual, what your skill set is, and let's get the best out of you. What makes you feel good? Right. You know, I drew on you guys and your experience. I drew on coaches that I'd had in the past that I had a lot of respect for. How mm-hmm. did they go about it? So for me, it was kind of learning on the fly. Like, yeah, I've been around baseball my whole life. I know it backwards and forwards. But this is the first time I've been in a, hey, I've got to build relationships with players. As a hitter, as a baseball player, I didn't need to build any relationships. We do. Right. Because we, you know, we have personalities and we like certain guys on the team and we're buddies. Right. But I didn't have to. All I needed to show up and rake. And as long as I showed up in rake, I'll do anything I want. Now, all of a sudden, I can't get any hits anymore. So I've got another job to do. And I'll tell you what. Last year, it was a great bunch. I really liked the guys. Yeah. I really liked the players. They're so much different than my generation. But I really, truly enjoyed them. Yeah. I enjoyed hanging out with you guys. I enjoyed the tough conversations, the great conversations. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think I'm going to get back in uni at some point, you know, maybe next year and yeah. do it in what capacity. I don't know, but I think it's pretty cool giving back and being a part of an engine moving forward yeah. with one goal. And that's winning and losing games.
Absolutely.
And because I think I've got a lot to give and too much to just not to stay off the field, if that makes sense to you.
I agree. So, I saw you operate, and honestly, and I've said this to other people, that ultimately I see you as a manager, dude. I really do.
Yeah.
I think you have the demeanor for it. I think you have the temperament for it. Like you can be hot, you can be neutral when you need to be. Obviously you have the knowledge of the game, and you know, I think managing is more about managing personalities and a team, you know, galvanizing a group of men. It's not so much about our knowledge of the game. We all have knowledge of the game.
Sure.
You know, but not everybody can lead men. And I think you have a quality that has that ability to lead men and make guys. I can imagine a Brett Boone team, somebody that will run through the wall for you. And
yeah.
You get a group of guys with talent that's willing to do that, then you can wreak some havoc on the league. And I don't know. That's just me. You know, that's my thoughts. You know, the sky's the limit for you, man, in the game of baseball. You have a plethora of knowledge and experience and things that you can fall back on, and people as well in your circle that know the game. And so, you know, that's your bloodline, brother.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
I keep seeing celebrities post me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly. You don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there. It's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
This goes I appreciate Beast. Time will tell. We'll see. Base, in your experience now as a coach, not as a player, as a coach, best base runner you've ever been around. And it, now I'm not talking necessarily from a speed standpoint. No. Yeah, a lot of anybody could pick out the fast guy. Best base runner.
It's very easy for me. It's Corey Seager. People might be surprised.
Right. People would be surprised by that, wouldn't they? Yeah, because they think, oh, you got to be fast to be a great base runner. Wrong.
Yeah, I say this to, I've said this for the last few years. I was with them in Texas. I even said it to the group in Pittsburgh this year when we were going over base runner stuff and how we cut the bases and how you decipher information of what the other team is capable of doing. I said it during the World Series. We were in Arizona and I was doing an interview on the panel and they asked me about it because Seager had did something. I said, that was not me. That was all Corey Seager. And I said, if there's one player that I've ever been around, you know, because you've heard this, the notion that, hey, you don't really need a third base coach. Well, that's one player that I could say does not need a third base coach. He would not need a third base coach. He's very instinctive. He knows his capabilities, knows what he can and can't do on the bases. And if you just allowed him to just make his own decisions, he'd make really good decisions all the time. But he cuts the bases well. He knows when to do things, when not to do things. He's the best base runner that I've personally been around.
All your times at third base, who's the one guy you don't want to run on?
Oof.
That's a lot to choose from.
Yeah. Actually, the guy that, I mean, everybody's got their nemesis. Renfro was, he's unbelievable. Hunter Renfro, his arm. But Acuña is the guy that you respect for me. Because he can pick the ball up anywhere and throw you out from anywhere on the ball. I mean, he could be on the track and pick it up or throw a seed to home. Or you think you've got time and the ball just closes unbelievably. But now there's a guy on my team right now in center field that, oh my goodness.
He's a freak. And I'm not saying freak in a bad way. Freak in a good way.
I don't have to run on him, so I'm glad. But all his ability to throw a baseball is ungodly. It's unreal. I mean, he made a throw the other day. They weren't tagging up, but he caught the ball. And we're talking about
Cruz.
O'Neill Cruz, yes. He just picked it up and he just threw it to third. It's like a tag play, but they didn't tag. And the ball it's ridiculous how quick the ball
just keeps going
from the center field track to third base. It's unreal. And I played catch with him. And it's scary. It's scary because he's just nice and easy. And when he opens his hand up, it's like someone's shooting something out of a gun. Yeah, I don't have to run on him. So if he was on the other team, I'd probably say him right now.
I want to get to this 2026 Pirates team.
Mm-hmm.
Doing well, 32-28. Tough mm-hmm. division. Yes. Tough division right now. You got Milwaukee, who's always... St. Louis, I think, this year, better than people thought they were going to be this early in what they're calling a rebuild. Cubs, going to be tough.
Yeah.
They're right there with you at 32-28. I think Cincinnati's a little better than people thought. And Milwaukee, to me, we saw them a year ago. We ended up sweeping them in Texas.
Right.
But that's a good baseball team. It's just not a bunch of stars, but they always pitch. They always play the game. They put the ball in play. Tough division. Tell me a little bit about this 2026 Pittsburgh Pirates, Don Kelly, your skipper. Mm-hmm. And then I want to talk about we're going to go back to Cruz. We're going to go to the obvious Paul Skeens, and we're going to go to this young kid who I think is going to be unbelievable. And people that don't know, being 19 years old, being 20 years old in the big leagues, how unbelievable that is. I know you see the Mike Trouts and the Harpers and the guys now that they're bringing up early, Acuna, but this, just because Griffey gets there when he's 18, 19, doesn't mean, oh, everybody can do it. It's an overwhelming thing. I know Brett Boone at 20 was a junior in college, playing in the Pac-10, you know, and at times having a tough time. I probably thought I was ready for the big leagues, but I still had a lot to learn. I had a couple years where I needed to hone my skills. Exactly. But tell me about this Padres team, and then, or I'm sorry, this Pirate team, and touch on Paul Skeens, the phenomenon. You really don't need to touch on him. Everybody knows how good he is. You got to be with DeGrom the past few years, a world-class Hall of Fame talent. And then Cruz, and let's go finish with Connor Griffin. And how good do you think this kid's going to be in the future?
Okay, you know, first of all, with this 2026 Pirate team, you know, I felt like, first of all, Donnie Kelly's he's been unreal. As a leader of this team and this organization, you know, he and I talked this off season, and man, it was like talking. It's like you and I talking right now. It's so free and easy, and it's just straight baseball talk. And you know, we're like minded, and you know, so this was definitely the right spot for me to be from that aspect. You know, we wanted to change the mindset that from just kind of like, we don't want to be mediocre. We don't want to be the woe is me team. We don't want to be the Pirates that are the whipping boys for everyone when they come in town to think that, okay, we're going to go and win the series because this is a Pirate. When they see us on the schedule, they think that, okay, this is a victory. Like, this is the easy part of our schedule. No. So we're changing that narrative. And but it started with us as a staff having a belief in that and ownership of that and accountability as far as all those things are concerned. And then breathing that into our players. What the front office did is they went out and signed Brandon Lau, Ryan O'Hearn, you know, guys that have won. Marcell Ozuna come from winning, you know, the Braves. And so you bring in some guys that can play and have some track record that have come from organizations that have won, and then you infuse them into the rest of your team. You got Brian Reynolds, who's there, and Cruz, and other guys that are good players. And so now you're lengthening your lineup right away, but you have to change the mindset. And those guys help change the mindset because they want to win. They're used to winning. They have an expectation to win. And so that the clubhouse is already infiltrated with that. Now, so as far as the team aspect, you know, we just want to change, like, just change the narrative. Like we look at it like, okay, we're not playing other teams, they're playing us. And so we know we have dynamic pitching, and that was our strength. And last year, you know, the offense was one of the weaknesses of the ball club. They couldn't score runs, and so we fixed that. We brought in bona fide guys offensively. And so, you know, so far it's been good. The offense has played great. The starters have given us a chance to win every game. The bullpen obviously is another issue. Maybe we'll hit on that at some point tonight. But just the belief of what we're trying to accomplish. You know, we want to be a playoff team. We want to be a World Series contending team. We want to win a World Series. I haven't won one since 79. And Pittsburgh's a better place when the Pirates are winning. And the fan base is unbelievable. They're supportive. They love their sports in Pittsburgh, and we just want to give them something that they can be proud of this year. And Don Kelly has done an outstanding job this far as helping us build that. Paul Skeens, well, like you said, everyone knows who Paul Skeens is, what his capabilities are, and how dominant of a force he is in game. But the things you don't see is those 4 days that he's not pitching. I mean, his you know how Corey Seager's routine is with the stuff, pregame stuff. Yeah, it looks goofy, but it's like he does it religiously and faith. Well, Skeens, every day he has something, some kind of routine that he's doing. You know, it's very regimented. I mean, unbelievably regimented. Like, there's no waste. There's no like taking anything for granted between starts with him. I mean, he don't think that he just shows up on the fifth day and says, I'm better than everybody else and I'm going to go out on the shelf. No. Days 4, 1, 2, 3, and 4 are big days for him. There's a lot of preparation, man. You know, obviously it's game planning and things of that nature, but you know, physical little things that he does with throwing med balls and doing all types of stuff that he does. Like, he's got a strict routine he does every single day. It's exhausting to watch it. He's a big man too, but he does these things faithfully. And like, he has a warrior mentality. Like, he's a winner, man. He's a straight up winner. So to watch him prepare and then to watch him perform, it's a joy. Because you know that he's going to give us a chance every time out. You have a chance to win a ball game. You just got to figure a way to score a few runs, and you should win that night. But he's been unreal, unbelievable, great guy, good teammate. You know, and the thing is, we look at him like he's 28. He's not. He's young. He's very young. Like, he's a young pitcher on the staff as well, and he's kind of leads the staff at a very young age, which, you know, if they had an Evaldi or somebody like that on that staff with those younger pitchers, you know, to really give them some wisdom from the experience over time, they would even go to the next level, because they're a very hungry group, and, you know, they're seeking information. A pitching coach, Bill Murphy, is very young as well, but very smart, very knowledgeable. I connected him with Greg Maddux just to be a sounding board and someone to talk about the game of baseball and the aspects of pitching and the psyche behind pitching. And so they've communicated. So, hey, we use your resources, man, to help build our guys, because we got a lot of young guys. And so, but Skeens has been, he's unbelievable, and the best is yet to come with him. No doubt about it. O'Neill Cruz. He was the guy that kind of pushed me to come to Pittsburgh, is from a player perspective, because I saw him from the other side last year when we went into Pittsburgh. And when I was just scouting him and doing the report on him, you know, there was a lot of stuff there that, you know, I felt like we could take advantage of. You know, he wasn't like, man, he doesn't seem like he shows up for every pitch. He seems like he's not interested out there half the time. Like, let's take advantage of him if he's going to make mistakes, which he did. Sam Hagley led off with a base hit up the middle. It went under his glove and we ended up with a triple. He didn't even go after the ball. When I got to spring training, when I finally had a chance to meet him and talk to him, the first thing I told him was that, what I just told you.
How us as Rangers, I remember we talked about it. Yeah. And it was noticeable, like, hit the ball there. Look at how he behaved right there.
Yeah.
That was something that was a discussion in our dugout.
Yeah. And I had that conversation with him right away. And I said, one of the reasons I'm here is because I'm intrigued by you. You know, I said, I don't know if there's anyone in the game with your skill set. I mean, the total package, 6'7", runs like a deer, throws like he's shooting it out of a cannon. I mean, can hit for power. I mean, from line to line, he can hit balls as far as anybody I've ever seen. I'd like to see him and Josh Hamilton hit in the home run derby together. He'd match Josh. He's got unbelievable power. I mean, there's nothing on the baseball field physically that he cannot do. And I wanted to explain to him that your talent is God-given. Now, if you work at that talent, if you want to give this gift back to God, let's take this and turn it into a skill. And then you're giving God the appreciation he deserves for blessing you with such a tremendous amount of talent. And he loves the Lord, so he understood that, what I was talking about. And I said, my job is to hold you accountable to do things right every day. I said, we're going to start with just baby steps. And we're going to do ordinary things extraordinarily well. That's all I'm going to ask you to do. That's it. And I said, I want you to be honest with me. I'm going to be honest with you. If I ask you to do something you don't understand it, challenge me. Make me explain the why and why it's important for you. And I said, if you do something that I don't like, I'm going to tell you. And I'm going to explain why I don't like it. If you make a play and it records an out, but it's the wrong play, I'm going to tell you this is not what the winning baseball looks like. This play worked in the moment, but it's not going to work 10 times out of 10. It's going to cost us ball games down the road if we approach it this way. And so we just build a good relationship, man. And we have a good, great, solid foundation where we can have any conversation. So I put him through a lot of drills. I hate that he left for the WBC because I lost 3 weeks pretty much with him of work. And when he came back, he had a rough game in Minnesota to open the, in New York with the Mets to open the season. And I really didn't feel great about him at that point. I was still kind of holding my breath when balls went up. And now I feel good about it. You know, he's progressed now. He even comes in and says, I look like a center fielder now, don't I? You know, he'll say little things to me like that. And I say, yeah, you're getting there, you know? And so I'll keep pushing him along and talking about gold gloves and platinum gloves, and because he should be elite. There's no reason for him not to be elite. And I've got to push him to be elite. And I love that part of it because that's what gives me purpose as a coach as well. And so, you know, he's been a joy to work with, man. I enjoy every day, you know, just tapping into him and seeing what else you can pull out of this guy, because I'm telling you, he could be the best player in baseball if it all comes together and clicks.
I believe it. I mean, I see the skill set, and you talk about the power. I've seen the power.
Unreal.
And now it's a matter of growing up and being a real baseball player and being a smart. And that comes with experience. And we all, you know, I tell this people all the time, I've learned a hell of a lot more in this life from getting my butt kicked than from having a lot of success. Success comes from getting your butt kicked.
Exactly.
But without that, you know, and by the way, it's a pretty good tool to humble you, to keep you on the straight and narrow. But and it's even more satisfying when you go through tough times. Like a year ago, we laughed. We said, hit it center field.
That's right.
You know, exactly. to be able to completely turn that around as a player.
Yes.
That's more satisfying than just never having it happen to you. You never want it to happen to you, but because it did, it's really satisfying when you correct that behavior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now we can talk about Griff. Woo.
I saw him come to the big leagues, Bees, and I thought, I looked at him and I'm like, this guy's a monster. Yeah. Just the frame. And then I saw him run.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just kind of watch little things with him. He's 180, 190 bats in. This guy's holding his own. It's not normal to come to the big leagues, be 20 in a day and age where they don't, average isn't a big number out there and not too many people hit for a high average.
Right.
I think what do I got him hitting right now? I think he's hitting 270.
But
when you're 20 years old hitting 270 in the big leagues in 2026, you're doing something.
Yeah,
and you know the power's there. I know his first home run was opposite barrel.
On his birthday.
It might have been his second one went opposite field, too.
Yeah,
but you know he's got that in his quiver.
Yep.
He runs like a deer.
Oh.
And he's a shortstop. And and by the way, he was 19. Now he's 20. He was 19 when he got to you. So yeah, touch a little on him.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, he was a center fielder basically. He's only played maybe a year of shortstop. I don't know if he's played a whole full year of shortstop yet, to be honest with you, if he has, just over it. So he's still learning that position. But, man, you know, when I met him in spring training, like, I don't know that I've ever met, like, a more pure kid. It's unreal. Like, I was like, all right, something's off. There's no one, like, this good. Can't be. And I said, I'm just going to wait. The blemishes have to show up in the character or something. There's got to be something here that makes you like, he's a butthole. Something. I never saw it. And I still haven't seen it. I mean, what an unbelievable human being, first of all. So his parents, hats off. They've done an outstanding job. He's married already. It's all types of things. He married at 19 years old. Like, and he's so focused on what he wants to do with his life. You know, he's not this young kid that's searching for anything.
Right.
Like he understands who he is as a man, as a person already. Like, he's well beyond his years from that aspect. So now it's just focusing on baseball. And you're right. Yeah, early on, you know, when he was just going through the learning curve of the season, and he started figuring some things out, and teams are adjusting and pitching to his weakness, and he's got it. So he's learned the back and forth of it a little bit. He's very smart, a really high aptitude player. And he told me about 2 weeks ago, and he was like, hey, you know, I'm not like the 1-for-4 type of guy. He said, I'm a 2-3 hit a night guy. I'm not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said that to me. You know, because he was like, where I'm at right now, like, people think that I'm doing okay. He said, well, I'm not. Like, and to me, like, no, I'm not like a 1-hit a night person. I'm 2-3 hits a night. That's the kind of player I am, you know, and I love that. Like, to have that know-it-all of who I am and what I bring, you know, like, he's not waiting to be a force in the offense and say, okay, he's young, put him in the bar.
Right.
No, he don't want that. No, he's like, no, I want to be.
Like Chipper Jones.
Yeah, you're right. That's right. And that's rare. That's rare to have that psyche at that age and to know that, you know, and he's not arrogant and he's not cocky at all, but he's confident. And he has to do it. And I told him, don't ever lose that. Don't ever lose that, because you have to think, I'm better than the guy on the mound every night.
Absolutely.
I'm the best player on the field every night. You have to think that, because you're battling every night. You're fighting for yours every night. And everybody out there is trying to take it away. You got a pitcher and 8 defenders out there. They're trying to fight you, and you fight them back. Like, if you don't believe that you can do things against that, then you're going to lose. And so he has the mindset that I'm an elite player. And so there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to pan out and do everything that we expect and then some. In Pittsburgh, I don't know if you – it's a rotunda out there in left field. It's a stair. It wraps around. It goes up really high. I haven't seen anyone hit a ball there. He's hit 2 balls on top of that thing already in BP. It's unreal. I mean, all the other guys just go – they just be in awe of it, how far he can hit a baseball to all parts of the park. It's sick. It's crazy.
I remember, Bees, I'm watching him when he first came up. And, you know, he's at the interview. First of all, I always hear, 19 coming to the big leagues. You got to be something special, first of all, to even get the call. But then I saw his interview and they asked him a question. And he said, yeah, I'm a 5-tool player. I'm basically, he said, I'm great at everything. Now, but it didn't come across as arrogant jerk. It was just kind of like matter of fact. And you know what? Part of you to be great, you got to be a little naive when you're young. You'll learn. This game will humble you. But I always believe that if you think you're great, you are. If you think you're good, you are good. Because that is the whole thing, especially at the big league level, is what's between the ears. If we truly believe, when a player comes up to me and you and tells us what we want to hear, that's not believing. That's trying to convince us that you believe when you really don't. But if a man walks to you and tells you what kind of player is and what it, and you look in his eyes and you go, this guy believes that. Ooh, give me 100 of those guys.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to learn. They're going to get humbled by the game.
Yeah.
But if you've got that tool to you really think you are, wow, that's something that not too many people have genuinely.
Absolutely.
It's more of a, I'm supposed to say this. I'm a #1 pick. I'm getting to the big leagues. But when you truly believe it, that's a tough enemy right there.
Unbelievable. And you said, they said, I'm a 5-2 player, but like you said, not in an arrogant, cocky way. I mean, tell you something with this kid. When he signed that contract, they wanted to have the press conference, and they had the press conference, and I think it was MLB channel. It was national. But anyhow, he went to the veteran players and asked for their permission for him to have that press conference.
Really?
Oh, he was not going to have it. Yeah. Because he's like, I haven't done anything yet here. I'm getting rewarded. I'm blessed. He said, but I haven't done anything. You guys have put in some work. You guys have earned a lot of stuff. You've achieved things in the games. I haven't achieved anything yet. And he said, so I don't want to bring too much light to myself right now. You know, he said, I haven't done anything yet. And he said, so I'll shut this press conference down if you guys are not okay with it. And they all were like in support of him doing it. And not only were they supportive of him doing it, we made sure that every player and staff was there and that day. But yeah, that, I thought that was incredible to even have that thought, you know, That's amazing.
Well, Bees, I appreciate you taking the time, man. You guys are you're doing well. I wish you, I wish you nothing but the best. Mm-hmm. Right now, you're in a three-way tie for the wild card. I know it's only June 1st. We only got 4 months to play. But from what I'm seeing, watching you guys, I catch your game here and there. It definitely seems to be turning the tide in Pittsburgh. And it's a long time coming, you know. I know what I'm going to advertise for you for the podcast. I'm going to have a picture of Tony Beasley in his Pirates uniform, and I'm going to play the song We Are Family, because back in the 70s, when they were good.
That was the theme.
That was the theme, you know, yeah. with Stargell and Parker. Yeah. I mean, that's what it was. And I remember, you know, Dad's Phillies teams, we're going to Pittsburgh, man. We're playing the big bad Buccos.
Playing the lumber company,
yeah. Oh, baby, we got Omar Moreno with the huge afro in center field.
That's right.
We got Bill Madlock at third winning batting titles. That's back in the day. But, you know, that if Pittsburgh turns it around and you win, I think that city, I know it's a Steeler town, but it can be a Pirates town because I've seen it. Absolutely. It's been a long time coming. Bees. Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming on. I love you. I wish you nothing but the best. You know, we'll stay in touch as the season goes on. For those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast now, check it out on YouTube. For those of you listening, download this podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Tony.
I keep seeing celebrities posts, me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly, you don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there, it's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.